What's up, everybody? This is Lisa Fields, the founder and president of the Jew 3 Project, and these are five highlights from 2023. Number five, we release a critical and important curriculum for parents to talk to their teens about gender and sexuality in partnership with Access. This curriculum has reached thousands of parents across the country and helped them have better conversations with their teens about gender and sexuality. Number four, we released a mini doc telling my story and the Jew 3 Project story earlier this year, and it's reached thousands of people across the globe. Number three, Courageous Conversations 2023 was an amazing success, our best year yet. This year, we focus on how to reconstruct after deconstructing your faith. And we have so many testimonies of countless people that have been blessed by Courageous Conversations in person and virtually, and continue to be blessed through our on-demand option. Number two, as you know, we released our Juneteenth documentary last year, but this year it got picked up by PBS and was available in millions of homes across the country on Juneteenth of this year. That is so amazing. God is so good. And number one, I am so excited that our Unspoken documentary was picked up by Tubi this year. So it's available free to anyone who wants to watch it and reaches our target audience of skeptics who are struggling with this idea that Christianity is a white man's religion. And that's not all. This month, it was picked up by Fox Soul and aired on national television for the first time, available in millions of homes across the world. We could not do what we do at the Jew 3 Project without you. We have so much lined up next year. I have a book coming out next year that I'm excited to tell y'all about, When Faith Disappoints, the gap between what we believe and what we experience. And there's so much more that we have lined up for 2024. The amazing thing about 2024 is our 10-year anniversary. Jew 3 turns 10, 2024. And so we want to encourage you to stay tuned to all of our socials, subscribe to our newsletter for the exciting things we have coming up in 2024. Thank you for helping us reach these milestones this year. And if you want to continue to help the mission and vision of the Jew 3 Project and help us finish this year strong, or if you see this in the new year, to help us continue the work we do for the Jew 3 Project, you can give online at jew3project.org/donate. You have the option to give online, or there's an address to mail your check in person. Every gift you give helps equip. We could not do what we do without you. So thank you. We appreciate you, and more to come. Grace and peace, and God bless.
Hello, welcome to the Jew 3 Project podcast. I'm your host, Lisa Fields. I'm the founder of the Jew 3 Project.
Well, thank you for watching another episode of the Jew 3 Project podcast. As always, I'm your host, Lisa Fields, the founder of the Jew 3 Project. And today I'm joined by Justin Brierley. He is author, a speaker. Would you call you, you're an apologist as well, Justin.
I like to think of myself as maybe, I don't think of myself as an apologist in the way you are, Lisa, because you really kind of are out there kind of defending the faith, you know, in all kinds of scenarios. I've always been more of a host of apologetics discussions. I've usually been letting other people do the apologetics, and I'm just learning on the side. But occasionally I'm in the midst of it actually kind of making the arguments myself. So
you've highlighted a little bit about yourself. Just tell the audience a little bit more about who you are, your journey.
Well, a lot of people may know me from a show called Unbelievable, which I hosted for 17 and a half years. And that was really a radio show, podcast, video show that brought Christians and non-Christians together for dialogue and debate based here in the UK. But we had kind of guests from all over the world, and it was very frequently atheists and Christians in dialogue and debate, but also other worldviews, Islam, Judaism, Hinduism, and so on. So that was kind of really where I learned kind of, you know, how to defend faiths, the arguments for and against Christianity, that kind of thing. And in the process of doing that, I sort of, as I say, picked up a bit myself, was able to write a book at about the 10-year mark of hosting that show called Unbelievable, Why After 10 Years of Talking with Atheists, I'm Still a Christian. And so, yeah, that was kind of how I got into it, how my own journey developed. And I guess that gave me a good sort of ringside seat to a lot of the conversations going on in our culture around faith and belief. to the extent that only very recently, having moved on from hosting The Unbelievable Show after 17 years, my newest project is actually kind of looking at the way the conversations have changed in our culture recently. So a new book and podcast called The Surprising Rebirth of Belief in God, looking at the sort of rise and fall of new atheism as a as a movement, but also the way that I think there's a new conversation emerging in our culture around God, especially some interesting secular intellectuals who are increasingly talking about God in very positive ways, even if they're not believers themselves. So all of that is keeping me very busy at the moment.
Yes. We've talked about several times on this podcast about how atheism is not a prominent thing in the African American community, but it is growing. When we think about atheism and the ways in which it has grown, what in different spaces, what is the common thread that you see that leads people to atheism?
I mean, if I'm honest, I often think it just is the default for a lot of people in our culture. I mean, I would say that's especially true here in the UK, where, you know, the influence of Christianity has been waning over many generations, really. And to that extent, a lot of people, they might not use the word atheism, but that's kind of their default mode for a lot of people. You know, they don't have any particular religious belief and so on. And so I think there's a sense in which it was sort of, I guess, intensified during the early 2000s, especially. And that was during this kind of new atheist moment where you had some really well-known figures like Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris, Christopher Hitchens, Daniel Dennett, the four so-called horsemen of new atheism, really kind of taking some public stages, having a lot of airtime. There was a real growth in the kind of online atheist movement alongside that, but they were writing these best-selling books. And I think that kind of helped to kind of, a lot of people who maybe were just non-religious suddenly started to kind of think of themselves more as atheists, more as, you know, specifically people who didn't believe in God. And I think for a time it was even kind of, it felt quite edgy and cool and, you know, the thing to do and to, you know, to call yourself. So to that extent, I think there was this kind of, it was in vogue to kind of, to specifically think of yourself as atheist. So I think that it's come from there, but generally I'd say in the West generally, but especially, you know, in my country, in the UK, there's been a kind of a general secularization that means that atheism, even if it isn't called that, is the kind of de facto option that most people just kind of find themselves falling into in that way.
You described something you call new atheism. What is the difference between new atheism and a older version of atheism?
I think the real difference is just that it was a lot more public, a lot more dogmatic. It was not afraid to use ridicule when it came to critiquing religion. So you would find, you know, Richard Dawkins on stage at the Reason Rally in 2012, encouraging, you know, this audience of tens of thousands on the Mall in Washington, D.C. to mock and to ridicule religion. And that's what a lot of people have done. You know, I think of some broadcasters like Ricky Gervais in my country, who's an atheist. You know, he will do stand-up routines where he's kind of mocking the Bible. Maybe, you know, in the U.S., Bill Maher, you know, was well known for documentaries like Religious, where he kind of really just, you know, parodied and so on. So I think it was that sort of, that very dismissive sort of way of looking at religion that probably typified new atheism. And I think that was quite difficult, I think, for a lot of Christians to deal with, because it's one thing to sort of try to give an answer to an atheist, someone who's willing to listen, if you like, and to engage. But I think it's much harder when you feel like you're just being mocked or patronized and so on. Sadly, I think a lot of Christians kind of responded in kind and, you know, to in turn kind of would try to kind of use the same kind of weapons. But I never think that's a very good idea because in the end, that's not ultimately what we're called to do, you know.
So we had a guest on, I don't know if he was ever on Unbelievable, but he wrote a book called Faith of the Fatherless. He was a psychologist who studied basically the father relationship between most atheists and their fathers. And he discovered that many of them had challenging relationships with their fathers. And he kind of made this connection. And I thought that was fascinating, that there was some kind of trauma that
he felt like most prominent atheists had that led them to believing that God didn't exist.
I've heard of that book, and I never had the author on, but it did come up once or twice in discussions, this kind of theory, a kind of psychological theory, I guess, that a kind of bad relationship with your father or not having a father figure kind of could lead to a propensity for atheism. Mm-hmm. I guess I was always a bit wary of deploying that one in a conversation, because it could immediately set the wrong tone potentially, because
yes,
there is always that danger, I suppose, of rather than addressing the arguments of the atheist, kind of making it something more like an ad hominem. Well, you just believe what you believe because you had a difficult childhood or something. And I'm slightly wary of employing that, because I wouldn't want to cause offense, you know, when I'm trying to reach someone who doesn't share. But at the same time, of course, I think we're all a mixture of intellectual, psychological, emotional, spiritual causes that bring us to who we are. So I think I think even, you know, the most rational atheist would have to admit that, of course, there's going to be psychological influences that may drive people towards faith or away from faith. I think it's useful to know when to kind of bring that in, because there's going to be times when it's going to be less helpful, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I wouldn't bring it in unless the person brought it in. You have to lead them kind of on a journey of questions for them to kind of get there versus you leaving them there, because I think that would go bad.
Yeah.
Because then they would think you're not answering my questions intellectually. I'm bringing you intellectual questions. You're trying to make it about emotion.
And I guess there's always the possibility that they could turn that on you and say, well, maybe you're just a Christian because, I don't know, you had mother issues or something. You know, I guess someone could always come up with some psychological reason why you've adopted your perspective. Now, I do agree. I think we shouldn't dismiss that, because I think, you know, we're all a mixture of things. So why not look at those reasons for why we do or don't believe, you know?
Mm-hmm. When you think of atheism and all the discussions that you've had over the years with Unbelievable, what is the best mix of a response to someone who's navigating atheism?
It will depend a lot on the person. Mm-hmm. So I meet lots of atheists who are atheists for a variety of different reasons. Some of them, it is because they have some kind of bad experience of religion, you know. Mm-hmm. And so the thing that you need to get to is what happened and the specific reason that they left the faith because of that. It's not necessarily because they've got a really good argument against God. It might be more a kind of an emotional or an issue tied up with something that happened. But I do meet people, you know, for whom they're kind of maybe somewhat open to the idea of God. They just don't believe that Jesus could have risen from the dead. Or I meet someone for whom the problem of evil is the big thing. So there's going to be different reasons for every different type of atheist, you know. And so I think the real helpful thing is you know, having the conversation and not just treating everyone as the same and hopefully getting to a kind of a conversation that's actually helpful for that individual. I mean, the place I would often want to get to, well, one of the things that I found most helpful, though, in navigating these conversations is to realize that we all come to life with a worldview, with a way of looking at life. And I think when I started Unbelievable, you know, back in the very early days, and I was just learning as I went along how this whole apologetics thing went, I'd kind of imbibed the view that as a Christian, all the burden of proof was on me, you know, to prove these strange beliefs in God and heaven and the supernatural. But what I realized actually increasingly was that the atheist guests themselves would have a set of assumptions or beliefs about the way life is, about the universe. And they also needed to give an account of that. So it wasn't just that the Christian had to defend all of their beliefs. There's a set of beliefs tied up with what you might call naturalism or materialism, you know, the view that all that exists ultimately is matter in motion and the physical laws of the universe. Because if that's the way life is, then that's got all kinds of consequences to it. It means we live in a universe which essentially came from nowhere and is heading nowhere, where there's no ultimate purpose in the universe. There's no ultimate meaning to life. Those things, if they exist, are just kind of inventions by us. There's nothing such as, you know, true justice, right or wrong. These are kind of again, illusions, if you like, that are kind of just we've created just to, as useful ways of getting on in life. There's all kinds of consequences of a very strictly atheistic worldview. And what I discovered was it's just as important to ask the questions of an atheist about how they make sense of life on their worldview as it is for them to be able to ask the Christian. And I think, as I say, because a lot of people do kind of adopt atheism as a kind of default, they never actually even think of it that way. They never question it. They just think, well, you know, I just don't believe in God. That's all atheism is. But actually, for most people, it is actually a lot more than that. And I think in the end, the question is, well, look, does Christianity or atheism make best sense of the evidence that's available to all of us? And when I increasingly kind of looked at sort of the way the universe seems to be set up to produce us, the way that we seem to have these moral intuitions that there is such a thing as true right and wrong, value, human rights. And as I looked at the way that across all times and places, people seem to have a common idea of the idea of a transcendent source of purpose and meaning in the universe, I thought, well, all of those things actually, in the end, seem to stack up better against a Christian worldview than against this materialist worldview. So I think when you look at it in that way, you can have a really interesting conversation with an atheist, because then you're saying, well, let's compare and contrast our two worldviews in that way.
No, that's extremely, extremely helpful. And I think that leads to my next question on kind of what you're seeing in this new movement as it relates to atheism, how people are trying to find the answers to those questions you're laying out that have identified as atheists in the past. And they're like, I need to have some kind of framework. Am I communicating kind of your new project direction correctly?
Yeah, I think you are. And I think the thing that sort of I really lay out in the book and this new podcast documentary series, The Surprising Rebirth of Belief in God, is that I think the new atheism, it was kind of new and exciting and it had its moment, you know, in the popular press and media, but it kind of did fade from view actually almost as quickly as it arose. And I think there's a variety of reasons. I think firstly, there were all kinds of internal issues that led to it kind of internally unraveling. But also I think it ultimately didn't answer people's questions, you know. I think there's still just a kind of an existential question people have, which is, what is the purpose of life? And if the answer is there is no purpose to life, you just have to kind of invent it for yourself. I think that's really difficult for people to actually put into practice, because I don't think we're made to kind of live in a kind of do it yourself story. I think we're very much conditioned. We're made to live in a story where we have a sense that there is a kind of beginning, middle, and an end. There is a point, you know, I have a meaningful part to play in something that's bigger than me. Mm-hmm. But the problem with the atheist story of reality is that there is no such story. You know, it really is just random, and you just got to kind of make the best of it. And hey, you know, and if the cards don't fall your way, that's just tough. You know, that's just the way it is. And I think most people just sense that actually that doesn't make sense of their actual experience of life. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, one good example of this is, you may have heard the story fairly recently of a woman called Ayaan Hirsi Ali, who was one of these new atheist figures. She is a Somali-born, now Dutch, sort of thinker, politician, who was very much, because she came out of a very fundamentalist Islamic background, she kind of turned against God and against religion and became in the mid-2000s part of the new atheist set of thinkers. So she was sharing stages with Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris and others. She wrote this book called Infidel, you know. But extraordinarily, just, you know, in November last year, she wrote this viral article called Why I Am Now a Christian. And so Ayaan Hirsi Ali, having been, you know, one of these new atheists, was now describing herself as a Christian. And she gave a number of reasons for this, a number of which kind of were quite sort of cultural and political, the way that she felt that atheism, secular humanism, just doesn't provide enough of a kind of a bulwark against what she sees as some big threats, you know, from fundamentalist Islam, from sort of world powers, hegemonic powers like Russia and China and so on. But she also talked about at a personal level that she just couldn't eventually find that atheism gave her enough reason for living. It just was not enough to explain what you're here for, what the purpose of life is. And she said those questions just actually never went away. And she gives a very kind of moving interview about this as well, where she talks about the fact that she kind of found herself like spiritually bankrupt, and she just realized that she had this sense that she needed to have something bigger than herself. And mm-hmm. and she found that in the Christian story eventually. So I just think that that story is happening more and more in our culture. People who maybe tried atheism, tried to kind of do the whole kind of science and reason that gives you enough to kind of base your life on. I think they're just running out of steam, and they're finding, I'm still depressed. I'm still not, you know, this hasn't answered my questions. I still need something bigger than myself to live for. And that's why I think people, in my view, have now left that kind of new atheist thinking. I think it still exists in certain corners of the internet, but it's no, in no way the kind of cultural force it was, you know, 15 mm-hmm. or 20 years ago. And that's why I think you're seeing a lot of these new intellectuals, psychologists, lots of other people talking about the value of religion, the way it does give us a sense of meaning and purpose and identity, and what we lose when we lose something like the Christian story in our culture. So that's where I think the kind of the movement has gone in recent years.
Yeah. No, I think, you know, when I think about the importance of purpose, some kind of reason for us being here, if you don't have a faith that kind of gives you the framework, you know, the worldview, part of that is why are we here?
Like, yeah, absolutely.
Then it can feel like hopeless, like because life is so hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
For so many people. And there's different degrees of hard. And when you're suffering, you try to make sense of what you're experiencing.
Yeah.
And so it's important for, I can imagine, people who are atheists to find some kind of reason to make sense of the suffering and pain that they experience.
Yeah, I think this is the thing with Christianity, is some people reject Christianity because of suffering and pain, and because they mm-hmm. can't obviously make sense of it. If there is a loving God, it's the old problem of evil. But it doesn't get rid of the problem of suffering. You know, you will still encounter suffering. It's just that the answer atheism puts on it is that it's meaningless. There is no rhyme or reason. And I don't think that kind of might solve the problem intellectually, but it doesn't solve it at a kind of experiential level.
Yeah.
And that's really what Christianity does. It says, look, I'm not, you know, there are obviously, we know, philosophical arguments and responses to the problem of evil. But at its core, the real answer in the Christian faith is that you've got someone who's with you in your suffering. It's like you're not alone. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem. That's the big difference for me between Christianity and atheism. Atheism says you are basically alone. And you know, it's just the way life is. Some people get lucky, some don't, you know. Whereas while we don't deny in any way that suffering is a great evil in the Christian story, we also say there's going to be a redemption of it. And the reason you can get through it is because there's a God who knows what it is to suffer, who's came with you into your suffering. And that alone, far more than any kind of, you know, grand philosophical explanation, might be the one thing that keeps someone going when they're in that place of suffering. So for me, it's like, you know, there's frequently I find people who have actually been drawn towards faith through suffering rather than being turned away from it. It's because they need something like that to make sense of it. And I just don't think atheism has the resources to give any kind of a comfort that, you know, something that can psychologically help someone get through in that way.
Yeah. Or the presence of someone, you know, when I think of suffering, one of the most helpful, hopeful things about it is that we have a God that suffered with us. So he doesn't circumvent the process of suffering. He suffers with us. And in the presence of our suffering, what gives us hope is a suffering savior. And so atheists don't have that hope that comes with knowing that we have a God that suffered with us, that can identify and intercede for us in our suffering. And so, you know, I just think of how much, if I didn't have God, how hopeless and empty I would feel in the midst of pain. And so I think, you know, sometimes we for people are intimidated sometimes to even talk to atheists. Christians are intimidated because if people are atheists because of like science and trying to reconcile science and faith, there's an intimidation. I don't know enough to be able to communicate for most Christians. And it's like, but you still, when you're talking about how people are trying to find, like you said, the atheist, like what is the reason for my existence? You do have something to offer, even if you cannot, on an intellectual level, engage somebody who may be a chemist that's an atheist. You might feel intimidated, but you do have something to offer.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of the responses I sometimes hear to this is from some atheists, at least, is, oh, well, then you just believe Christianity because you need a crutch. You know, you need something just to help you get through life. And, you know, and I don't need that crutch, you know, I'm kind of, and my answer to that is kind of, well, you know, a crutch can be really useful if you've got a broken leg. You need a crutch, you know, if, and I think we are broken people. And that's the whole point, is like, you can kind of get so far in life saying, I can just do this by myself under my own power. But actually, we all reach a point where we run out of our own resources. And yeah, I'm quite happy to say Christianity is a crutch because I'm a broken person. I need more than just myself. I can't do it in my own power. And I just meet more and more people who I think are getting to that place, realizing, you know, the more that we employ technology and science and our cleverness, the more we seem to prove to ourselves that that will not save us. You know, the more of a mess we tend to actually make this world. You know, you look at the world around us right now, and we've got the kind of technology at our fingers in these phones we have that, you know, would have been like pure magic to our ancestors. And yet, even with all of that incredible technology and learning, we still make ourselves more depressed, more unhappy. You know, we've got the highest levels of anxiety and depression among young people because just the knowledge, the learning doesn't make you more wise, doesn't make you a necessarily a happier person, doesn't. And it's one of those things where I just think, you know, how long does it take before we realize we can't do it ourselves? You know, and it's almost like every generation seems to need to learn this again, that actually we're kind of, it's not a bad thing. It's not a failing to need a savior. It's actually just the way we're made. We can't do it ourselves, you know?
Yeah. No, that's good. Because as you were talking about the crutch, a part of one of the first things to get saved is to realize that you're broken and need a savior, that you need the crutch. And so if you think you don't need the crutch, then you're not ready for salvation. It's till you come to the knowledge that you actually are broken, that need a crutch, that you can actually get the help that you need. And so I love that illustration. I'm going to be using that and quoting you. as it relates to your book and your new project, the documentary, what do you want people to get out of this work when they look through the documentary, read the book? What do you want them to take away? I'll say, what do you want atheists to take away? And what do you want Christians to take away?
Yeah. And it's good to kind of differentiate those, because I think there will be different things that people are coming to this with. I guess for someone who's not a Christian, who's listening to the documentary series on podcast or reading the book, I would hope it would give them just a reason to think about whether we can survive in our, as a culture, as individuals, without some kind of a story to make sense of life. That's at the center of the book, really, is this idea that we need a story to make sense of life. And what I argue in the book is that we once did have a common story, especially, you know, in the West by and large, which was this Christian story, which came to, you know, shape all of our kind of imagination, our moral instincts. And yet in the last, you know, couple of centuries, that story has started to fade from view as we've had this increasing secularism. But the problem is that it's not like, you know, G.K. Chesterton had this famous saying that when people stop believing in God, they don't then believe in nothing. They have the capacity to believe in anything. And that's what I think we're seeing in our culture. We're actually seeing people aren't any less religious. They just kind of get religious about different things. And so you have, you haven't had a kind of a mass conversion to kind of a scientific rational atheism. You've got a lot of people who are now kind of experimenting with all kinds of other sort of, you know, new Eastern New Age type religions, a bit of this, a bit of that, but also actually just other stories that are kind of taking the place of God in people's lives. It could be a kind of materialist story. It could be like politics. It could be a particular ideology. It could be a kind of social cause. People always put something basically in the place mm-hmm. of God, because we can't live without something like that. We have to make sense of our life somehow. And so, but I think the stories that people are reaching for to try and make sense of their life are kind of growing increasingly thin. They can't sustain us. You know, there's nothing wrong with, you know, political activism, but if that is your God, it will let you down and you will become a very unhappy person, because in that religion, there's no grace. There's no room for messing up and coming and kind of finding forgiveness. And you need that as a human. So I think we're kind of reaching a stage, as we've forgotten the Christian story, but people are trying to make sense of their life through all these other kind of quasi-religious stories, where actually, I want to say to the atheist or non-Christian, is there a better story? In fact, could that old story that maybe you discounted be the story that actually does make sense? And hopefully they may see some of the stories and hear some of the testimonies of some of the people I interview for the book and the show, who themselves were in that place, you know, were trying to make it by themselves, trying to make sense of life through the story that they were inhabiting. But they found it ultimately didn't make sense. And they, to their very great surprise, found that the Christian story was the story that did make sense of their life. And I just am finding more and more of those people, just encountering more and more of those people, as I say, especially as that new atheist sort of phase has tailed off. I just feel like something's changed in the atmosphere. There's a kind of a new openness, a new readiness for some people to try God, to just see whether there's something in this. So I would just encourage the kind of agnostic, curious person who may be thinking, well, I'm not sure, dip a toe in, you know, see what happens when you actually open up the Bible, when you try praying, when you, you know, maybe join a church community and see what happens. You might be surprised. For the Christian who's watching or reading, I guess my hope is that they will go away encouraged that even though we see a lot of bad news in our media about the church, about Christianity. And I'm not saying there isn't things to be worried about. There are. I think there are some bad directions that we can mm-hmm. go in. But I want to sound a note of hope, which is just to say God isn't finished with the church. The church can often go off in lots of crazy directions, unhelpful directions. But God, I believe, often, God, well, the story of the church, again, is just a story of something that keeps on dying but keeps getting reborn again. And the reason it does is because it has a God who died and got, you know, raised to life again. So I just feel like what I'm trying to kind of sketch out in this book is maybe we're in one of those dying and rebirth phases in the life of the church. And what you see as kind of, you know, everyone's losing their faith, that everyone's deconstructing, it's all kind of, you know, there's all these scandals in the church. I agree with all of that. But I also sense that God's doing something new, that there is actually a kind of a new wave of interest and openness to God, to Christianity. And let's not lose sight of that, because actually sometimes we're so focused on the bad news that we fail to see what God might be doing actually. And I see this especially among the younger generation. I don't know if that's your experience, Lisa, but I think they're really hungry to hear something, some good news again. Because mm-hmm. I feel like they've been starved of kind of meaning and just a sense of purpose and identity. They're really confused about who they're meant to be. And I just feel like there is actually an open door potentially for the church. If we can get this right, if we can get over our tribalism and politicization and everything else that does exist, I just feel like there's a door and we need to sort of see what's behind it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I'm very, very hopeful for the next generation and what God will do and the opportunities that are there. Justin, I mean, I think you've laid it out beautifully, but do you have any closing words outside of the words that you've already shared, and just tell everyone where they can get your book and access to the docuseries?
Oh, well, thank you for the opportunity to come on. Yeah, I would just encourage folk who are feeling, you know, like there's a lot going on in our culture and it's difficult. It is. It's always been difficult, though. Every generation has faced its own challenges, and we will face ours. But I do believe in a God who works through a very big picture. And sometimes we only see our little slice of the picture, but there's a much bigger picture, I think. And I guess Christian history has always been a history of, as I say, of death and rebirth. And that's mm-hmm. what I'm trying to express in this book and this podcast series, is that there's something new stirring. And I think we need to take notice of it. And maybe that means we need to start, you know, looking at the questions this generation has. And sometimes we're caught answering the questions of a previous generation. Maybe we will change the way that we need to think about how we do church and how we meet, you know, if there is a tide of kind of meaning seeking millennials, Gen Z coming, then we need to be ready. So, so I hope it'll be a challenge and an encouragement. If you want to find out more, if you want to get hold of the book, if you want to listen to the documentary series, if you want to get hold of my newsletter and get updates that way, the easiest place to go is justinbrierley.com, which is my website, and go there for the book, for the podcast, and for the newsletter.
Well, thank you so much, Justin. It's been a pleasure to have you on the podcast. Remember, you can catch all of our podcast episodes at Jew3Project.org or wherever you stream your podcasts, or on our YouTube channel. You can get merch, everything, resources at Jew3Project.org. You can give online at Jew3Project.org by hitting that donate tab. The option to give by mail or to give online is all there. Remember, here at the Jew3 Project, we're helping you to know what you believe and why you believe it. Until next time, grace and peace, and God bless.
Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Jew3 Project podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. You can tune into all our past episodes at www.jew3project.com. You can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. Remember not only to subscribe, but also rate us. That helps us to gauge how we're doing and how you're enjoying the show. And it gives other listeners some ideas about the show as well. So thank you so much for tuning in. Also, remember, we have our Bible engagement app in partnership with Back to the Bible to help you get better engaged in the Bible every single day. You take a survey, it assesses your strengths and weaknesses and sends you Bible verses based on those. So it's a great app. You can download the app by searching in your App Store or Google Play, searching Jew3 Project, and it'll be right there for you. So thank you again. Remember, if you would like to become a monthly partner or a one-time giver, you can do so on our website or by mail. Just go to Jew3Project.com, hit that donate tab, and you'll see the option to mail in a gift or give online. We appreciate you, and I'm so, so thankful for you. God bless. And remember, here at the Jew3 Project, we're helping you to know what you believe and why you believe it.